Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. We are looking at records for both the S&P 500 Index and the NASDAQ Composite Index, trading close to the best level of the day right now. Dow Industrials also higher, up 120 points now at 19,920. That is a gain of 0.6%. So stocks are rising the most in 3 weeks. S&P at a record 2281, up 16 points, a gain there of 0.7%. The Dow, or the NASDAQ Composite Index at 5603, also a record there, up 50 points, higher by 0.9%. Treasuries tumbling as investors resume bets. The growth in the U.S. economy is set to accelerate. The 10-year, 2.46%, down 16 30 seconds. Gold down 7.10 the ounce, a drop there of 0.6%. 1208.50 on COMEX Gold. We've got NYMEX Crude West Texas Intermediate up 0.6%. 53.06 per barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude. I'm Charlie Pellett, and that's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Well, thank you very much, Charlie Pellett. You are listening to Bloomberg Markets on Bloomberg Radio. Let's take a look at the world of ETFs with Catherine Cowdery.
Assets in ETFs will top those held in mutual funds by 2025. That's a prediction from Inside ETF's Chief Executive Matt Hogan at the group's 10th annual conference in Hollywood, Florida. Tony Davidow, Vice President at Charles Schwab, says one of the fastest-growing areas in the ETF industry is in smart beta strategies, also known as strategic beta.
They have been the darlings for the last several years. So today, there are now over 1,000 strategies and $500 billion in assets under management. And these strategies are growing at roughly twice the rate of the broad-based market.
Factor ETFs are being widely discussed at the conference. Davidow says they're not just a marketing tool. Academic research on factor investing has been well known for decades.
What's different and unique today is the ability to package some of those factors in exchange-traded funds. But a lot of the big institutions have been exploiting these factors for decades.
Davidow and others are emphasizing the importance of understanding the methodology of factor and smart beta ETFs before investing in them. At the Inside ETFs Conference, I'm Catherine Cowdery, Bloomberg Radio.
This is Bloomberg Markets with Carol Messer and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, the market's definitely in motion on this Tuesday. In fact, you've got stocks rising the most in 3 weeks, sending the S&P 500 to an all-time high. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in today's trade from a technical basis. Here's Carter Wirth. He's head of technical analysis at Cornerstone Macro. He joins us on the phone in New York City. Carter, nice to have you back here on Bloomberg Radio. You take a look at this market, the S&P at a record, technically healthy market.
What's interesting, I think, is the sideways action. If optically you were just to, one is to stare at the chart of the S&P 500 itself, the market, we know that it's been in a very tight range for 30 trading sessions. In fact, how tight a range? It's the 2.1% range for 30 days only happened about 10 instances going back to 1928. So the question is, what does that mean? Meaning, after a strong advance post-election, we have this aggressive repricing of equities up. And then post the aggressive repricing, we get this standoff as people are digesting the news, digesting the presumptive facts ahead. And so the question is, if one's quite bullish, one believes that this is the pause that refreshes. Yes, this sideways action represents the consolidation of the preceding gains and that it's going to break out. And if one is bearish or cautious, one thinks that, well, the momentum is stalling and it's lost its ability to follow through. And either is a very reasonable point of view. What's going to be most important is obviously getting the sectors right. And that's was the case last year, and it's the case in most years. Which areas of the market to favor?
Well, which areas to favor then? I mean, that's the question here, right?
Right, there you go. Well, everyone's got their picks. Two that seem interesting to me, one for reasons I don't like and one for I do. Let's talk about energy first. I mean, energy has the curious distinction of claiming that it was the best performing sector in 2016. This is true. And yet, it comes with an asterisk. All the performance was generated in January, February, March, and April. In fact, from late April to the end of the year, December 30, energy actually did no net performance relative to the S&P. What's important about that is that it was only if one bought literally in the depths did one generate any alpha. Otherwise, purchases made didn't do any better than the general asset class equities as measured by the S&P. And the second thing that I think is important is how stuck crude is. If we look at crude just at the current price, and we know it's 53 a barrel, well, if you were to do the Christmas contract on the NYMEX, that's the December contract of this year, it's only at 55.56. And if you did the same thing for the Christmas crude of 2018, you're still seeing that there is no expectation. The 2018 Christmas contract is 55.67. That implies, all the collective wisdom of market participants, that crude's got no progress coming in the next 2 years. So I think there's a message there. We don't like energy as a bet, at least from the seat of the technical department. Whereas, something different, healthcare, that sad thing that couldn't do well, we think you play that as a contrarian play for a catch-up trade in 2017.
Interesting. How about small caps, which had a big bounce last year?
Yes, indeed. And it did something that is quite remarkable. In fact, small cap went up for 15 sessions in a row. That happened from November 4, just before the election, to November 25th. And that has only happened four times in the history of the Russell 2000, going back to 1978. And if one were to look at those past instances where you have 15 consecutive days up, how do small caps do relative to large? Small caps actually outperform looking out 1, 3, 5, 6 months. So we're thinking maybe it's the place to be if one has to be underweight.
Hey, Carter, you know, I don't know if your cell phone connection's a little funky, so I don't know if you can sit in a certain spot because we want to make sure we can hear you. So repeat that, just that last part about small caps in terms of performance. I think we may have actually, you know, we just lost him for a moment. We're going to try and get him back on a clean line. We've been talking with Carter Wirth, head of technical analysis over at Cornerstone Macro in New York City. And it's interesting. I think, you know, what he's doing, Corey, is really putting things in perspective, right? We've seen some big bounces, in various parts of the financial markets, but you kind of have to take a broader, bigger picture to kind of see where they're coming from.
Well, and maybe points to the limits of technical analysis itself. If we're looking at things we've never seen before, technical analysis, by definition, can't predict that.
Exactly. Hey, Carter, glad we've got a cleaner connection with you and that you're back with us. Just finish that last thought about small caps, because we were talking about the bounce that we saw with small caps last year, and you were just kind of finishing your point.
Sorry, I was just citing a statistic. Hopefully it's clear now. That the small cap index, as measured by the Russell 2000, small cap stocks, advanced for 15 sessions in a row from November 4th, just before the election, to November 25th. And that, as a circumstance, only occurred four times in the history of the index going back to 1978. And what happens thereafter, if you can even take four data points as being meaningful, is that small caps typically outperform the S&P, or large caps, on a forward 3-6 month basis.
What I was saying in your absence, what I was saying behind your back was, does this point to the limitations
yes,
of technical
analysis?
Does it point to the limited ability of technical analysis if we're seeing things never seen before?
Well, that would not be the case with anything. Why is there more burden on a technical analyst or technical analyst to deal with the unknown or the unseen than
right.
it would be from the quant or the fundamental? I mean, we've never seen a president like this either.
Well, okay, so you've watched the markets for a long time. You look at things from a technical basis, and right, you know, you can look at these technical indicators, and sometimes they can give an indication maybe, you know, there's some interesting correlation that says something. But we are living in kind of a different environment politically. We don't quite know what we're going to get. This is, you know, not a political...
That's right.
You know, he doesn't have a political track record or a political history that we can kind of say, well, this is what he did in this scenario, so maybe he'll do that again. This is different.
And those are the fickle things about, right, so what... equity risk premium should be appropriate for equities, or it's the same reason that who's to decide the multiple? Should equities be trading at 22 times or 24? It has to do with interest rates, has to do with geopolitics, and there are no models that cope with that adequately. That is what makes a market. There are people who have a sell on the largest stock in the world, Apple, and there are people who have a buy. This is ever thus.
So as you look forward here, when we start to hit these new levels, I mean, do you look at the things like valuations, like price to sales or even price to earnings that are starting to look kind of peaky for the S&P 500 when you take into account what's happening in the markets and who's participating?
Right, not from my seat. Those are fundamental inputs that are not a part of the process. What I think is important is to look at the breadth, meaning who's participating and who's not, and also what type. Is it? Is it cyclical, which is what this has been? There's been a big push in industrials and financials versus sort of value. And then the other issue is how does idiosyncratic growth behave? And that is to say, what's key is not because you call them fang or bang or clang, but things that are idiosyncratic growth, whether it's Visa or Facebook or Google or Amazon or Nike or Starbucks, they don't care in presumption about oil or dollar or Putin. You watch those to see where the market's going.
Well, we'll all be watching where the markets are going with this with the drama from the White House making things even a little bit more interesting. Carter Worth, head of technical analysis at Cornerstone Macro. So glad to have you on. We appreciate your time and your multiple phone calls during the segment. Even better.
Yeah.
You are listening to Bloomberg Markets on Bloomberg Radio. Coming up, we're going to get a look at the close and some of the stocks that are moving today in size. So we've got some record levels of the S&P 500. This is Bloomberg.